Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com. Support for this podcast comes from the Peabody Essex Museum, presenting Ethiopia at the Crossroads. On view now. Find out more about the exhibition at PEM.org.
Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Among the hottest cable shows out there right now, Bravo's Real Housewives, which this season touches down on the turf wars in nouveau-posh, catfight-rich Franklin Lakes, New Jersey.
Let me tell you something about my family. We are thick as thieves, and we protect each other to the end.
To the end, Real Housewives of New Jersey is a glossy, down-and-dirty, runaway hit right now for Bravo. And the woman behind the show, and much more in the world of American popular entertainment, is Lauren Zelaznik. She has a way that has got millions of Americans, especially women, tuning in. This hour, On Point Media powerhouse Lauren Zelaznik on making popular television now. You can join the conversation. Are you the audience for Real Housewives, Top Chef, Tori and Dean, Cable Hot Stuff? And what's your question for the woman who makes so much popular entertainment happen today? You can also comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me now from New York is Lauren Zelaznik. She's president of NBC Universal Women and Lifestyle Entertainment Networks, overseeing the cable networks Bravo, Oxygen, and the women's website iVillage. She's responsible for such shows as Top Chef, the number one food show on cable, the Real Housewives franchise, which has recorded record ratings this season, and Tori and Dean, Home Sweet Hollywood, which has also hit records. She's a powerhouse, widely seen as a mogul on the move, moving American entertainment. Lauren Zelaznik, it's a pleasure to have you on. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me, Tom.
You're a mover and a shaker. Martha Stewart says she's a huge fan of yours. You hang out at most powerful women's summits with such as her. What's your big project? In the biggest terms, what are you up to?
Well, let's see. Moving and shaking, I can't say I'm doing right at this very moment. I'm very still in front of my microphone.
Right, but you're putting together a kind of a huge end of American media that just seems to get bigger. I know your job is to bring in audience. That's what brings the advertisers. That's what floats the company. But what's your take on how best to do that today?
Well, I think that media has been under tremendous change over the past couple of decades. I think what has occurred to me over the past, 10 or so years, which has been the bulk of my television part of my career, is that television is such a new form of media.
Even now, after all these decades?
Well, compared to the lifespan of drama, being a couple thousand years old, I guess.
Or drumming, or grunting. Yeah.
Drumming, grunting, drama, right, comedy in general. Mm-hmm. You know, the medium is very, very quick. And when you think about the rise of digital media and how absolutely brand new that is, you realize how quickly TV may or may not be our form of mass entertainment, quote-unquote, forever, what is forever.
Mm-hmm.
So when you look at it on that scale, it's been the kind of boon to communication and neighborliness and eventness in the United States and some would say the world, with big event television like the Academy Awards or the Olympics or the Super Bowl. But at the same time, the fragmentation that's happening now makes me kind of hyper-focus on how to bring an event mentality and a cultural sway from the television screen out to the culture itself.
You clearly have that edge of evolution under your fingertips. I mean, if television started out mimicking old drama, stage plays, and it clearly did, now TV may go away, but visuals and video and voyeurism clearly are not going anywhere. And that end, the kind of voyeurism seems to be where so much television is gone. And you, like with Real Housewives, Tori and Dean, and more, I mean, is our whole sense of what TV does best changing? Is the best thing it does really sort of follow each other, follow us all around so we can all watch, leave out the artifice of the dramatist?
Well, I think that the artifice of the dramatist is an interesting question. There was a review recently that said something about, I think it was The Real Housewives, and it was kind of saying the best drama is, you know, is what is art based on fiction? What is art based on reality? And to me, TV in the reality form, the nonfiction form, is delivering on the exact same things that drama has delivered on for thousands of years, or the same thing that it's delivered on for 30 years since the Mary Tyler Moore Show.
Explain
it's
that.
Drama, mm-hmm. It's comedy, and in the form of a real person. Maybe the artifice, the need for artifice, has broken down a little bit with the accessibility of media so apparent. The need for as much of a simulacrum as your regular life, or some version of it that you can relate to easier than through a script. Maybe that's just a phase. Maybe it's interesting for now. But I do think that this kind of television delivers on what people have loved to see on any kind of screen. Let's say movies are about 100 years old, TV about 50 years old. Mm-hmm. They love to be made to laugh. They love to be made to cry. And, you know, I think that you don't call it entertainment for nothing.
Yeah, and we want to watch. We want to watch even fights and cat fights. Real Housewives of New Jersey, huge spread in the New York Times today in the home section showing some of these. I mean, these are super-duper McMansions. Maybe a McMansion doesn't apply. A lot of kind of nouveau riche and glad for it. Women in their homes sort of talking and buying and shopping and fighting, and your camera's right in the middle of it. Here's a little bit from one episode. This is Danielle on Real Housewives of New Jersey, one of the series' most colorful characters.
I was engaged 19 times prior to getting married. He was number 20, and I kept that ring because, well, hello. My lifestyle when I was married was glamorous, shopping, traveling, Black American Express cards. I was the only person that had one in the state of New Jersey. I actually got mine before Madonna did.
Before Madonna did, and Lauren Zalesnik, it's your show. I'm looking at Danielle in the Times here in this big photo spread in her house. I mean, everything is lavish, and when she gets together with the gals, everything is pretty edgy. James Poniewozik, a Time magazine friend of ours, a frequent guest of the show, writes about Bravo, your channel, as a cable powerhouse whose reality shows follow the pampered class and their various stylists, party planners, and other modern-day valets. Is that the way you'd describe the show? The brand, the channel, the network?
Well, I think the brand is invested in five primary affinities of our audience: food, fashion, design, beauty, and pop culture. And what's interesting to me about something like the fabulous piece in the New York Times today is that it's not in the television section. It's in the home and design section.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of our...
Looking at their lavish properties and them standing in them.
And interior design.
Mm-hmm.
And
yes.
It really goes very deep into these places in their neighborhood where you can buy kind of supersized furniture to fit these supersized houses.
Butterfly staircases, and glittering chandeliers, and acres of marble is the drop head here.
You bet. And what I think is interesting is that Bravo actually does not have a judgment on each of these kinds of lifestyles, whether it's Jeff Lewis, our attention-challenged house flipper in Los Angeles, or Patty Stanger, our matchmaker who only will make matches for men with over $1 million of net worth, or kind of this, you know, biggest hit on the network, the Top Chef franchise, which focuses on excellent, excellent quality and excellent, excellent command and mastery over this set of skills in the kitchen to be deemed a top chef. These are areas that people who watch Bravo experience in one way or another every day and are clearly fascinated by seeing all different forms of people who are a little bit like them, a very little bit, or people who you might want to be a little more like, or people who are just your neighbor and you wonder about them, and this is sort of a fantasy look into someone who very well might be your neighbor. So I would say that Bravo is an entertainment cable channel devoted to all forms of art, pop culture, and culture. And I think the debate is, what is the examination of the definition of culture?
Let's get a little more sense from Real Housewives. Here, we heard from Danielle. Here's Caroline and Teresa talking about a book they've just discovered written by one of Danielle's old boyfriends on Real Housewives of New Jersey. And they are shocked, shocked.
When someone's so nice to you like that, that doesn't
know
you, you got to worry why they're being so nice.
Okay. But you should have warned me. It was scary. This book out about Danielle says she was involved with kidnapping. She was involved with the Colombian cartel, prostitution. So if we're hanging out with her, that we're in danger also.
So tell me, what kind of woman is that?
And then they're like, would you want your kids around someone that was a kidnapper? So I'm like, no!
Talking about the girl next door when the girl next door is Danielle. It's culture, in its part. It's a slice of our culture. It's a slice that you choose to highlight, and it clearly, I guess, Lauren Zalesnik, it draws viewers. This is working.
Well, it is working, and I think what's interesting to me as an observer is it's hard to understand why the fictionalization of a family, small f, capital F, your choice, who lives in New Jersey, who lives in a so-called McMansion, who has a sense of a seamy past, but deep, deep, deep family relationships, why it's deemed better or worse to esteem it when it's called The Sopranos versus The Real Housewives of New Jersey.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour with hot and rising media mogul Lauren Zalesnik about her cable and online empire of all that's made for women. She is president of NBC Universal Women Lifestyle Entertainment Networks, oversees the cable networks Bravo, Oxygen, and the women's website iVillage. She's got irons in green fires and health fires and a lot more going on. Next month, they will bring out on Oxygen the show. Brace yourself here. It's Dance Your Ass Off. Here's a little bit. It's a reality weight loss slash dance show. Comes out in June.
12 contestants, 2,949 pounds. One goal, to get in shape. They're ready to shake and rattle their rolls. I'm Marissa Jarrett Winoker, and this is Dance Your Ass Off.
There we go. American culture. The dancers come in dangerously overweight, but with a great attitude.
What food did you miss the most this week?
Cheesecake! You know, I ain't got all this for nothing, you know. And I want to honestly say, you know, I'm not a size 5 or nothing like that, but I'm shaking what my mama gave me, baby.
Lauren Zalesnik, it's your show. Give us a sense of how these things come to be. How did Dance Your Ass Off come to be?
Well, we as in NBC Universal, mm-hmm. acquired the Oxygen Network a little over a year ago. Mm-hmm. And Oxygen is a longstanding independent channel set up to serve female audiences more exclusively than any of the other channels in the NBCU family. So in thinking about what today's woman is all about, this is a fairly young skewing network, 20s, 30 years old, as opposed to Bravo, which is more 30s years old. We really set about to define Oxygen with its own distinct personality, what we would call a brand. Mm-hmm. And the brand of Oxygen is for a woman who is, as we deem her, a trender, a spender, and a recommender. Somebody who may not be first to the trends, but absolutely gets into them, reads magazines, loves to follow the trends, who spends on herself, doesn't necessarily have a family yet, doesn't necessarily have a mortgage yet, you know, is earning a paycheck, a working woman who's very much still fulfilling her own dreams. So we really took two longstanding popular nonfiction and reality formats on television, weight loss shows and and dance shows and combine them to try to find the passion and the pathos and the energy that those two formats can bring.
Now, you're famous for sort of defining and going after a group called affluencers, that is, affluent influencers, I guess, in marketing speak. Is this really targeted at affluencers? I mean, this is not Real Housewives. These are not mansions or even McMansions. These are pretty ordinary, from the street, young people with a whole lot of pounds on.
Exactly. The affluencer was built around the Bravo audience, which is just demographically the most affluent, the most educated viewer on the cable entertainment dial. Oxygen is built around a woman we call Generation O. She's younger. She is single. She has not reached her full earning potential, although it is the highest concentration of working women, 18 to 49 on the dial. So that is who we're going after. And she's having a good time. The tagline, speaking of marketing speak, for Oxygen is Oxygen, live out loud. So this is a woman who is living out loud, comfortable with who she is, not wanting to be unhealthy, hence the need for weight loss, but wanting to have a great time out on that dance floor, whether she's at a club or on our television show.
Let's go to our callers. Newport, Rhode Island. Andy, you're on the air with NBC's Lauren Zalesnik.
Hi. Great show, Tom. Best show on internet TV or the web. That's a wonderful show. Thank you. Just want to make a point. I'm a 36-year-old single male, professional, successful, never had a problem with women. I've always been successful in that avenue, but I wanted to make a point that this show reminds me of why I'm still single. That these women are so self-centered, terrible, terrible people. I mean, I've watched the Orange County series. I watch it because it makes my skin crawl. So I watch it as a single male to feel better about being a single male.
And you'd rather be alone?
I'd rather be alone than with any of these women. They're just... they just don't have good qualities. They don't have good morals. They don't have anything that makes them good people in my eyes. And you know, that's the point I wanted to make. I'll take the remarks off air.
Andy, we'll respond to that. Here's a little more from Real Housewives, New Jersey. Here, Dina talks about having trouble fitting in as a divorced woman in Franklin Lakes, New Jersey, until she started dating again.
After a while, I started dating my now husband. All of a sudden, the women would see me driving his Mercedes or his Ferrari, and all of a sudden, like, ooh. Now they want to know who I am.
Jennifer in Charleston, South Carolina, you're on the air with Lauren Zalesnik.
Oh, thank you for taking my call.
Yeah.
I have tried to watch the show. I've turned it off, and I've been listening to your show. And the lifestyle, the mega lifestyle of these women, I think epitomizes what is wrong with this country in terms of excess consumption, excess materialism. There are millions and millions of women in this country who really work hard each day, who have a totally different lifestyle. And to sort of glorify the very thing, the excess of consumption of our natural resources and the shallowness of these women is, I mean, they have a right to their lifestyle, but to have it as some sort of cultural icon, I think, is really does us a disservice as this country.
Jennifer, thanks for your call. Lauren, there's a couple of listeners. Andy watches, but he watches to see why he should stay single. And you hear Jennifer, she says, look, this is everything that's wrong with our country, the dripping with luxury excess. How do you respond, Lauren?
Well, I would say that the reason entertainment exists is for people to have a reaction to it. And the network itself, the show producers themselves, certainly would never deem this is not an opinion-making channel. This is a channel that puts out people's choices. Mm. And it's interesting that it isn't in our sights or it isn't out of our sights to have people watch for affection and love for people. Not in or out of our sights to have people watch in horror and glad to be alone sitting on, you know, his couch. I think that you have to take what the culture is willing to reflect at any particular period of time. The culture of excess has clearly come back to haunt the nation. and no one feels good about that. At the same time, I think it's a little too much to judge, you know, five people on two episodes of a reality show and say these people have no values. They don't have your values, but they have their values. So whether their values are your values, we leave it up to you to react very strongly. The flip side of me wants to tell Andy, well, you should keep watching and watch Millionaire Matchmaker with Patty Stanger, because we get more calls and letters and emails from women who say, now I know why I'm still single if men are like this. So we're equal opportunity with the genders.
Cuts both ways. Lori in Malden, Massachusetts, you're on the air with Lauren Zelaznik.
Hi, Tom. Love your show.
Thank you.
I am addicted to all of these shows, all of the housewives from everywhere. Millionaire Matchmaker is genius. You're genius. But I have to say that it does, it just totally appeals to my basest instincts. It's like any tabloid. It's just the trashy side, and it's like I look at all these people with tons of money, and I have no money. But I can sit there and go, these women are idiots, and I have no money, but at least I'm not an idiot. So it makes me kind of feel better about myself. And ultimately, yeah. At the end, I do kind of find some sympathy for some of the characters usually. But really, it's just as bad as any kind of tabloid magazine. But I credit you because you are a genius.
You get it both ways. Lori, thank you very much for your call. Let's get another right here from Philip. He's on I-65 in Indiana. Philip, you're on the air with Lauren Zelaznik.
Hello, Tom.
Hi.
Reality television makes me sick. I hate it. I'm a truck driver. I'm gone, you know, for several days, sometimes 2 or 3 weeks at a time, and I come home and my wife and my two daughters are watching this stuff, and you sit down and try and kind of see what they're doing, and it's a total waste of time. I mean, you got this lady that you just talked to said that she was addicted to it.
Yes.
Which tells me she watches a lot of it.
Mm-hmm.
Why not be up and be active and be participating in life rather than watching some other people do ignorant things with the money that God has blessed them with?
Philip, let us pick it up with the mogul. Lauren Zelaznik, it's interesting. I mean, you know, Lori says it may be tabloid, but you're a genius the way you put it together. You've done very well in life. You went to Brown University. You're magna cum laude. You're Phi Beta Kappa. Would your mom and dad have wanted you sitting around watching Bravo and Oxygen, Real Housewives, and dance your ass off?
Well, my mom and dad are alive and well. My mom and dad, as great parents through the ages, myself, mother of three included, have their own version of get out away from,
right,
you know, the proverbial idiot box. We all have our parental limits. You know, what I would say to everyone is the media consumption is going up, not down. I think that there's a longstanding history of a nation of women who cannot understand how their, in general, husbands sit down on Sunday morning for the NFL pre-show and don't get up till after midnight.
What are they
doing?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
When they've watched, you know, SportsCenter or the post-game show for the second time. And, you know, it's a pretty oft repeated thing that reality television is sports for women. And it's the same level of keeping score, competition, ups and downs, heroes and goats, and that just when you are the goat, you can come back the next week and be the hero, same as any great, you know, pitcher sob story. In terms of art and the judgment about television or kinds of television, you know, I'll go back to, my personal philosophy, which is that you can make great plays, drama, straight plays, musicals. You can make really, really terrible ones. You can make a great, great movie, and I made several. You can make really mediocre movies, really terrible movies. Mm. You can be a great politician. You can be a terrible politician. So it's not so much the medium for me, but what the goal is. And the goal is to really deeply parse as many different kinds of personalities that fit this entertainment format around popular culture, and examine it from every side. It really is built around, you know, Housewives happens to be a very, very hot show right now. When Top Chef is on the air for its, you know, 16-week run in just a couple of weeks, you know, everyone is talking about that show and the characters on that show and the art of the kitchen in that show. When we're deep, deep, deep into fashion, people are amazed that we've, you know, changed the popular culture for a real debate about creativity around fashion. So again, it is a piece of pop culture in an entertainment format for a very, very big company that my job is today. And I get a huge amount of satisfaction out of it. And my mother, who is would be the first one to say she is well out of the 18 to 49 demo, is as much a fan as, you know, many people who say, I watch with my kids. I watch, you know, as a family.
Here's a little bit from the fashion show with Isaac Mizrahi, who's been a guest of ours here. It follows on Project Runway, which was there. The competition is around clothing design, fashion design, and here contestant Andrew hears from the panel on the fashion show, including the show's host, Isaac Mizrahi, that his design didn't make the cut.
Andrew, the audience called your design boring, average, and uninspired.
Wow.
What happened?
I didn't want to be quite so literal with it, so I really wanted to play with the shape. When I'm designing, I'm always thinking about three things: hanger appeal, fit, and sellability. If I don't sell, I don't eat.
Frankly, you would eat better if you thought outside the envelope a little bit more.
From Lauren Zelaznik's the fashion show, Reality as Sports for Women. Jay in Chesapeake, Virginia. Jay, you're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call. I have to first admit that I have not seen any of these shows, but I have been listening to the conversation, and I do watch TV. This is my comment. I grew up in the 70s, and I told myself when I get older, I want to be less like Archie Bunker, and I would much rather have been like any of the male characters on the TV show MASH. And I think that's what great TV does, is it draws you to a character, and you either want to emulate the traits of that person or you want to distance yourself from those. Now, having said that, I'd like to ask this lady, if she were back in the late 60s or early 70s during the height of the feminist movement, would she have considered herself a feminist, or would she have been the other, I guess, a non-feminist, and why? And I'll listen to the radio. Thank you.
Thank you, Jay. Lauren Zelaznik, you're a hard charger. You're successful. What about Jay's question?
Yeah, it's a great question, and I don't need to, I will in a minute, but I don't need to go back to the late 60s or 70s to answer it. I'm absolutely a feminist, unapologetically. You know, I think we're back in a funny way. I just have to bring it up to the Ginger or Marianne question. I'm, you know, definitely a Marianne.
Oh, this is Gilligan's Island?
Yeah, okay. Absolutely, if we're going to go all the way back there.
I didn't have a TV then. Tell me what that means.
Well, you know, people want to, as he really rightly points out, the beauty of reading a book or, you know, seeing any kind of creative art output is, do you want to get closer to that character or do you want to distance yourself from that character? And of course, the most interesting works kind of create attention for you. And the very, very popular term for that today is train wreck, which is kind of a terrible, terrible image, because this is not serious. This
but
is not
in a positive
tragedy.
Sense. You mean mount a train wreck and people will come to watch?
Yeah, right. You can't. In other words, it's usually
fat people dancing. They'll watch.
Well, it usually means it's so horrible, I can't turn away, which, you know, it really should not be the takeaway from most all TV. But what I think the question is this demeaning to women in very broad strokes? Mm-hmm. That seemed to be what the question was.
Yes, indeed.
And I would certainly hope not. I would certainly hope that it makes people absolutely examine what they're watching. I think you can't have a nation of you know, breast implants, Botox, facelifts, and all the rest, and claim to be so horrified by, you know, simple portrayals of many of those aspects of other characters on TV.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour with Lauren Zalaznik. She's a big wheel in the world of cable television, cable, and also an online empire, much of it made for women. She's the power behind Top Chef, Real Housewives, Tori and Dean, and a whole lot more, president of NBC Universal Women and Lifestyle Entertainment Networks. She oversees the cable networks Bravo and Oxygen, the women's website iVillage. If you wonder who makes popular cable TV today, well, here she is, one of the most prominent in that world. Let's hear just a little bit from another of her creations. This is Tori and Dean, Home Sweet Hollywood. That's Tori Spelling and Dean McDermott. They're married. They've got a family. Tori Spelling, of course, famous in her own right, daughter of the famous Hollywood television producer Aaron Spelling. It's a reality TV show, follows them around their most intimate moments in the latest, just started this past Tuesday. Let's listen.
My mind's focused on this, and your mind's focused on...
sex.
Always. I don't know how men can just go... Everything goes out the door, and it's just sex. I have like 50 things in my brain, and then... Okay, market. Okay, clean. Get the babies out.
Okay,
and
see,
sex.
That's what I don't understand about women. I could be having the worst day, and I come home, and I see you, and I'm like, oh, you know what would be great right now?
That's bull crap. If someone knocked your motorcycle over, you'd be furious.
I'd be furious, but...
And you would come in, and you'd be in a bad mood, and you'd be like...
From Tori and Dean on Oxygen... it's about to take off. 800-423-8255. Home Sweet Hollywood, it's called. Lauren Zalaznik joins us from New York. Bob from Salem, Massachusetts, you're on the air with Ms. Zalaznik.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I was listening to Lauren, and she seems like a very intelligent, capable woman. And my question would be, you know, where do you go next with the kind of... I think everything runs its course, and I think a reality show is at some point they have to bottom out. And there was a wonderful scene from the TV show Extras with Ricky Gervais where he was on a reality show. And he just said, you know, the Victorian freak show has never gone away, and we're just wheeling out the bewildered to be sniggered at. And I thought it's at some point someone that intelligent would go, I've had enough of this. Where do you go next?
Lauren Zalaznik?
Well, first of all, I absolutely love the Ricky Gervais Extras reference. It's, of course, he's a genius, and satire is, you know, so apt. I'd like to think that reality TV is going to top out, not bottom out. I would say that back to one of the earlier things we talked about, Tom, I think we're on a very interesting media television course. And in the same way, live kind of play theater launched television. News took over for quite some time. Very early simulacrums of houses and families in the 50s onto broader comedy in the 60s and dramas in the 70s. The rise of reality is really akin to the rise of cable TV, and I'd peg it back to The Real World on MTV, I think, in its 22nd or 23rd season. And I think, you know, the natural reaction is, oh, thanks a lot. We really didn't need it. But the fact of the matter is the country did need it. And, you know, 25 years later, cable gaining share on broadcast, all kinds of reality being explored, going from game shows to dating shows to what we call docu-soaps, to competitive reality around creative explorations, which we really feel like we've cornered the market on. We can't wait to see what the next iteration of television is going to be, and we'd like to be on the cutting edge of it. On the other hand, things kind of morph and ebb and flow in an exciting way out of our control. And the thing we're least in control of is what the audience appreciates. So we keep putting things out there that we think the audience is telling us they want to see, and we give them a slightly different form of it just to see if we can give them a little more or a little different than what they're telling us they'd like to see. And it's a roller coaster. You don't know what show is going to hit. You don't know when it's going to peak. And you do everything you can to keep it entertaining and fresh and, for us, real. But on a genre basis, I think television and digital media in particular is going to morph again. My personal challenge is this giant website for women called iVillage and seeing if the proximity to these amazing TV brands of Bravo, Oxygen, and the rest of the NBC Universal portfolio can kind of bring digital to a level that we haven't seen before
for these websites
that don't stand near TV places.
These things morph, but do they meld? Do you see TV and the digital world, the internet, melding, becoming one thing? Or does that just disrupt the flow of television to make it, of course, interactive is what comes with internet?
Well, to make it interactive is what comes with internet, but, you know, television has always been interrupted in various ways. That's why commercials used to be more effective than they are today, because they interrupted you and you kept having to watch until your show came back. Now you can go distract yourself even either with a pause button or a fast forward button, or you can go check your email, or you can text your friend and say, you know, wow, did you just see that? Are you watching the inauguration? You know, it can be highbrow, it can be middlebrow, it can be lowbrow chatter. I think it's a mistake to talk about convergence from a technological standpoint. Meaning, are you going to be able to watch TV on your phone? Are you going to be able to do computer things in your living room? I think the point is that the content itself will meld and that you'll be able to do the same kinds of content on whatever platform your particular audience is drawn to.
Lauren, we've got a lot of people responding at the website and beyond. Here's Margie, who says, here's a public broadcasting person who's also a fan. I watch both Nova, Frontline, and The Housewives of New York, I guess. All are great shows. I'm one of those people who will admit I love to watch shows that take me out of my life, just like books. And then here's Leslie, who says, I do watch because it's mindless entertainment that takes you out of your life. But I wonder whether there isn't a better mix of respectable women along with the typical, quote-unquote, she puts here, reality trash. I want to cut to the question that, I mean, here you've got an admirer and somebody who's kind of ambivalent. A lot of our callers essentially have been asking you, you're very successful, but are you, and let me just put it very bluntly, are you, with your shows, are you feeding off the decline of American civilization? That's kind of the question underneath the covers of a lot of these questions. What do you say to that?
I think the answer is absolutely not. I think these are very smart shows that are there for the taking in many, many ways. I think that you don't get the you know.
Dance Your Ass Off?
I thought you were strictly on the Housewives stuff. I think Dance Your Ass Off, which you'll see in a couple of weeks, is a beautiful show. It's about people who have lost a tremendous amount of control in this one area of their life. Why would you be kind of highfalutin and, you know, reading your local paper or Time magazine or listening to an NPR show about the scourge of overweight America, where everything is supersized, not just the houses, and then not give 12 real examples of people who are absolutely failures at this one area of their life, not going in for surgery, not going in for something,
yep,
you know,
no stomach
crazy
stapling
like
here. They're going to dance until they lose it.
They're going to dance till they lose it. They get nutrition counseling. They live with people who are suffering the way they are. They have parents, brothers, sisters, and mothers who have died from being obese. And it's a very compelling set of stories in an absolutely unapologetically entertaining format. So, no, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I do draw a line. We do at Bravo. We've absolutely think that there are better and worse ways to portray all these very, very human issues.
I'm reading here in New York Times Magazine from last fall. I mean, think about how this gets done. And you're right in the middle of it here. They're sort of following along as you're working on a show. I think it's an episode of Top Chef, and one of your colleagues is saying, you know, about sort of an extra twist to the knife that'll really put the player under the microscope, and says, you don't think it's a little gratuitous? This is the general manager for Bravo. And then here you are at 30 Rock saying, guess what? It's the toughest city in the country, New York, and you're tossing ideas around for how to, like, sort of ramp up the drama even more. I mean, part of your job, I guess, is bringing on that train wreck, as you put it.
Well, for that in particular, you know, when you hear Tom Colicchio or any of the unbelievable high-quality, you know, four-star, five-star guest judges on that show. Mm. They are the ones who help us produce these shows. You'll watch Top Chef Masters, which is all four- and five-star chefs competing for charity in a new format called Top Chef Masters. And what they say is, whatever you show inside the Top Chef kitchen doesn't come close to what I've experienced. And my point to you would be, why would we esteem the Bill Buford book Heat or mm-hmm. any other Life of a Chef Inside the Kitchen and then say that that's beautiful and that's art and isn't that amazing, and then turn around to a TV show just because of the genre and say that's despicable for some reason.
I don't hear anybody saying that, but I'm just visualizing you up at 30 Rock, sort of turning,
well,
twisting
the
knife,
the
bringing it on. Here's a little bit from Top Chef. Of course, Bravo going into its sixth season soon. Here's Top Chef 3 in Miami, which aired in 2007 with one of the characters here, or one of the chefs here, Hong Huynh, taking the prize.
I worked so hard to get here and to prove myself and have so much support from America. Oh, I'm speechless. I'm speechless, but I'm sure you hear more from me later.
Well, you did a great
job. Thank
you
so much.
Congratulations.
Ah.
Thank you so much. You're the Top Chef.
Yeah!
Moment of Glory, 2007. They're on Top Chef. Allison in Burlington, Vermont. You're on the air with Lauren Zelaznik.
Hi, Lauren. Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I basically just wanted to let Laura know that I think that the way that you choose the women specifically for Housewives is really great. And I'm 21, and I'm going to be coming out into what people call the real world. And I think that a lot of the women in Housewives are almost, I see them as role models. Because, you know, you have, like, the two women on the OC. You had Gina and Vicky, who had really high-powered jobs. Then they had to balance their household, and their, you know, and they were working women. Then you had Lisa on the Atlanta season. And then in the New York City season, you had Bethany and Ramona and Jill. And on this most recent New Jersey season, you have, you know, Dina, who's an interior decorator.
You know your stuff, Allison.
Yeah, and then I'm a really big fan of all of the shows that you've ever put out, Lauren. And then, you know, on your Tori and Dean show, you have Tori, who's, you know, an actress who's writing books. And then, you know, she's obviously married and has children. So I think that, you know, some of the women, I think people could see they may not have jobs, but I think that you do a fabulous job in picking them. And I think that a lot of, like you said, your Oxygen people, as well as, you know, your audience on Bravo, they could really see them as role models. And I think that you do a really great job in picking the women that you have.
So you're glad to have Lauren Zelaznik steering our popular culture there, Allison.
You do a great job, Lauren. And I think that there may not be people out there who think that you do, but I think that you really, as a young woman, like I said, I'm 21, I'm going to be a senior in college, and I think that what you do is amazing, and I'm an avid fan of every single one of the shows that you've ever put out.
There's a Bravo for Bravo and Oxygen. Thank you, Allison. Mary in St. Matthews, South Carolina, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Lauren. My question is, when will the Real Housewives of Atlanta be back? I think they're hilarious.
Bring them back. Real Housewives of Atlanta. In that case, not New Jersey's sort of Italian-Americans, but these were African-Americans in Atlanta. Do they ever come back, Lauren?
They're coming back. Have no fear. They're coming back. They're absolutely fabulous women. And I think what's also great is that we have a very, very engaged audience the same way you do by email and phone. We love to hear all these different points of view, and we value all of them.
Jane in Gloucester, Massachusetts, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Yeah. I
really appreciate what your guest is saying. However, I'm coming across, I've definitely been probably a moth to the flame a few times, and the whole train wreck thing was pretty much ringing true with me. I feel like she definitely sounds like an intelligent and nice woman, but I think, with all due respect, I think you're kind of fooling yourself with the fact that what you feel that these reality shows are doing as far as contributing to society in a good way. And I think that the bottom line, and I do think it's definitely entertainment, and what you're doing is you're doing your job and you're, you know, you're getting the ratings. But at the same time, I mean, I've seen tidbits and of Housewives and all the others, and it's all, you know, as a role model. I just heard the last caller, a 21-year-old girl, saying that these are role models. I'll take your response off here, but I think if you search your heart, this is just, I come across after watching some of these shows feeling really depressed. Like, this is a someone I would never want to be a role model, somebody who spends $18,000 on a handbag. This is just, and people getting humiliated over their weight. It's just sad. Thank you for taking my call.
Jane, we've got it, and there are more callers I'm not going to get to. On the one hand, we've got Siobhan in New Haven, Connecticut, saying she's a PhD student, and Bravo gets her through life. On the other hand, following up on Jane here, Lauren, we've got Brenda in Aiken, South Carolina. She says, I'm a feminist, and I really respect what this woman, you, has accomplished in a cutthroat industry, but humankind will never be better off for your labors. Wow. Do you get this spectrum all the time, Lauren? You've got your fans, and you've got people just shaking their heads and saying, decline and fall.
Well, sure. We would hope to get it all the time. You don't really ever cater to everybody's tastes. I guess I would go back to the goal, which is not to prove to anyone that we're leaving a particular kind of mark on society. But the fact is that the culture itself is ever-changing. It's a boiling pot of good, bad, and otherwise, and we contribute mightily to the boil. And
isn't your goal just to make money, though, to find the boil and get in there, to get the train wreck up so the eyeballs come? Isn't that really it?
Well, there's tons of ways to do that, and what happens is you quickly fall back on kind of a base and very simple argument, which is, quote unquote, gee, what will they be doing next? Capital punishment on, you know, the nightly news to get the news ratings up. It is absolutely not the way most people who work in entertainment think about their air or their screens. Mm-hmm. I would, again, kind of look to the cultural tastemakers, whether they're critics or fans, and you know, ask again, the New Jersey Housewives is such a perfect example. There's very little to criticize about an Emmy Award-winning show called The Sopranos. Those are very similar characters, fictionalized. Mm. Why not kind of engage in the beauty of the reality of people in the world who live this way every day and have your reactions to them positive or negative, but never neutral?
Lauren Zelaznik, president of NBC Universal Women and Lifestyle Entertainment Networks, the power behind Bravo and oxygen behind Top Chef, Real Housewives of New Jersey, Tori and Dean, Home Sweet Hollywood. It's been fascinating. We don't get a glimpse into your 30 Rock suites there very often. Thank you for joining us today, Lauren.
You're so welcome.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.